Hi, hello again, everybody, and welcome into another edition of Racing Refresh Happy Hour. That's right, it's Wednesday. You know what that means. It's time for episode 31, this one titled Larson Locked In, and I don't do it alone. We thank the good Lord above for that. Let's bring in the cast of characters for this week. Let's bring him in. He's the show creator. He's my favorite Canadian for the next hour and change. He's a tired guy because, you know, he did the Vegas nightlife and he was out there with Wayne Newton and all the boys and partying hard. Let's bring him in, Adam Carabine. Come on in here, buddy.
Well, a hearty Omaha to you, Logan. Yeah, I am tired, but I must admit I was not living it up in Las Vegas in the way that one might think. I made the possibly foolish decision to drive there and back from the Vancouver area up here in Canada. Just about a 19-hour drive if you go straight. I stopped along the way, but I'm just kind of recovering from the drive, and I'm just tired today. But you know what? We're gonna bring the heat. We're gonna talk all things. We're just gonna talk about all the things. So there you go.
NASCAR to and fro. Bring the heat. Let's bring in our producer, who's a little under the weather herself, but she's gracious enough to say hello to all the Racing Refresh. All the refreshers out there. I like it. I just created a new fan base, the refreshers. Let's bring her in. Peggy, the one and only. Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I feel as good as I look.
Well, you look beautiful. You look beautiful.
Poor producer Peggy's not feeling well today, but we're happy you're here.
Well, her favorite guy, Kyle Larson, won, so. And with that, Peggy, any final words before we get this joint jumping? Anything at all?
He's not my favorite guy.
Well, I don't hate him,
but...
Well, but who is your favorite guy?
I'm not prepared.
You could just tell us.
Wait, I am prepared.
Ryan inside Laney.
There he is. Guy. Very nice.
All right.
That's it.
Well, we hope you feel better, producer Peggy.
Anything else?
It's not COVID.
That's always good.
Is that the first time a COVID test is aired on this show?
Probably not.
Yeah, that's fair. I remember when you passed out live on the air of the previous incarnation of this thing.
I don't know if that was live or beforehand. No, that was live.
Because you took out the internet with you.
Yeah, I did.
Adam, were you watching that one?
I don't think so. I think I missed that one.
Oh, man.
I'm sad I missed it.
Golly. All right. Well,
dig into the archives, see if we can find it.
Peggy, thanks for pushing the buttons as always with us. We greatly appreciate that. Thanks for toughing out your cold. And we'll bring you in for some final words a little later on.
Okay.
All right. I love you, honey. Let's have some fun. All right.
Love you too, Logan. Oh, sorry.
I love both of you. You're both my honeys as much as I talked to both of you. All righty. That means it's time for our weekend review. All right. Mr. Carabine, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to let you tell me what you thought about Riley Herbst's win for literally a minute or two. I'm going to give my dog a bone so she'll pipe down. Peter's going to take me off screen. What'd you think of Riley Herbst's win? Peggy, take me off screen for just a few moments.
Well, look at this. It's just me. Riley Herbst getting his... Oh,
I'll help you out here, buddy.
Thanks, pal. Riley Herbst getting his first ever NASCAR win. Some people that I know, won't name any names, were not too happy to see this. I think Riley Herbst gets a lot of unnecessary hate. I was down in Vegas, as you know, this past weekend, and so I got to meet him and chat with him after the race, and he was just like such a cool, happy guy. It was really neat to see him win at his home track because he is from Las Vegas. And yes, love you too, Matt, my fellow Canadian. Yeah, it's good to see you, Matt. I don't know, he was just so excited and like full of character. And while I've heard the criticism that he is seen as somewhat of like a silver spoon type guy, just because his family comes from some good money, I feel like that's kind of pretty much everyone in NASCAR right now anyways, because it's kind of an expensive sport to get into, you know? So welcome back, Logan. Oh, yes.
Hey, buddy.
A knick-knack, paddywhack, and give your dog a bone?
I did, because... Did you hear she was starting to fuss?
I did, yeah.
But, you know, you're
there. I don't know if you could hear me there, Logan, but.
I did. I heard the whole thing.
Yeah.
You're there for a pretty historic occasion. It's kind of flown under the radar. That win was SHR's 100th of their history.
Yes, yes. He did have a special flag at Victory Lane there that had 100 on it. And some people didn't know what it was, but yeah, no. Their 100th win and comes with for Riley Herbst. They're, his first win ever.
Do you think that's going to kind of get the proverbial monkey off the back? Because usually, not always, of course, but usually when a guy wins, it takes so much pressure off, and they tend to start, I don't want to say coming in bunches, but look at how long it took for Chase Elliott to get his first win. And yeah. And then, you know, they've come pretty good.
I think it could, for sure. You know, there are some people who maybe have been less fortunate in the NASCAR world who have maybe not had their win and then have not been able to stay in some top tier equipment. And, you know, lucky for Riley Herbst, he has been able to stay at, you know, some competitive equipment. And I think this, you know, he just recently re-signed to stay there again for another year in the Xfinity Series. So I think this is a great showing, and it's kind of cool that it happened after he signed the extension to stay, when he already had his plans set for next year, but shows that he's got some talent, you know. Obviously you need some talent to dominate the race the way he did. And I don't know, I must admit I didn't know a whole lot about the guy before this past weekend, and I was impressed by the way he handled himself just with the media. And you know, he seemed like he was actually kind of a cool character. So
well, and you know a thing or two about cool characters. You surround yourself with them. And matter of fact, some would say the coolest is sitting in this here chair, but that's just neither here nor there. It's right here at the Loganity Lounge. Yeah, I agree. I don't quite understand why he's got such I don't understand why he's got the hatred or the veracity. But in some ways it's a positive, right? The fact that somebody cares about an Xfinity Series driver enough to have the hatred and veracity. Every series needs more attention, but the lower series certainly need a little bit more attention than the Cup Series even.
Absolutely, yeah.
Our founder says, knick-knack, paddywhack, throw Logan a chicken bone. Well, I don't have a chicken bone, but I do have a dog bone in case my dog starts acting up again. And then he said, Riley can race anywhere he wants. Well, you know, I think he's a talented guy, and
I don't know if is that a comment based on just like where his family comes from, because they are fairly well off, or is that a comment saying that he's got the talent to drive anywhere he wants? I don't know. He certainly showed some talent this past weekend, and you know, it, as much as you can hate anyone you like, but it you can't dominate a race like that and not have talent. So yes, is he a little bit more fortunate than some other drivers who maybe have similar talent, or maybe even a little more, and haven't had the same opportunities? Maybe that's possible. I don't know. I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but it doesn't mean that he is not deserving of the win or not deserving of a ride in the Xfinity series.
Well, that, you know, but that's the sport nowadays. We don't, you know, we might not like it or whatever it may be, but that's the sport nowadays. There's a lot of guys that are let's call it very fortunate circumstances to be where we're at.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys that have the talent to be there that aren't there because they don't have as fortunate of circumstances. That's a reality. Matt Marr says, Riley Herbst has had the speed and the cars to win more races just to get the bad luck with the wrecks or pit road mistakes preventing him from doing so. So, Matt, I want to know from you, let us know. Do you think that Riley Herbst is going to start, you know, getting a few more wins? Will they start coming in bunches now that that pressure's off and that, again, that proverbial monkey's off the back? Let us know. We got to keep on moving.
I could see it happening. I don't know if I see it this year just because he's not a playoff driver. And I know the playoff drivers are a little bit more competitive as these kind of final races wind down. But I certainly would not be shocked to see him win multiple races next season. In that 98 car.
Next year's a big year for Stewart Haas all the way around, even in the Xfinity series. Is there in a lot of uncertainty right now? We still don't know what's going on with Eric Amarola in that 10 car, which is – I would hope they know by now, then we just don't.
Yeah.
If they don't know, there's a major problem.
Yeah.
if they don't know, there is a major malfunction at that particular junction.
The neat thing, too, I wanted to add just about Riley Herbst is that, like, he's seen as kind of this super speedway ace, I guess you could say. Like, that's where he has had most of his success. He raced in Talladega in the Cup Series and I think got a top five in the Cup Series this past couple weeks ago. And yet his, you know, his first win comes on a mile and a half, which is kind of NASCAR's bread and butter. And he pretty much dominated the race, at least the last half of it. You know, his lead was so far ahead that he was hard to catch. So
it looked like Martin Truex in at the Coke 600 all those years ago. Yeah,
you gotta love that, right?
Well, it depends on where you're sitting. Yeah. Matt says he thinks we'll see a championship caliber team and driver out of that team in 24/25. We shall see. Let us know in the comments what you think of Riley Herbst and what his ceiling is in your view for next year and the years beyond. All right, let's go to the Cup Series. We're counting down to that Championship Four, as NASCAR calls it, because Final Four is kind of copyrighted thanks to the NCAA. We got one of those.
Is that why? I don't know if I knew that.
I don't know if it is copyrighted, but I know that's why they don't call it the Final Four, because – the NCAA is really big into the, the big tournament, the big dance, as we call it.
One of those American things that I just don't know. That's all right.
Do you guys not watch the big dance up there?
We do, but I would certainly say we're not as invested, or maybe that's just me. I shouldn't speak for all Canadians.
All right. Well, we'll get you ready for March, but we'll get you ready.
I'll fill out a bracket, you know, but I don't really know what I'm doing. So.
Yeah, so stay tuned this spring, the Racing Refresh NCAA Bracket Challenge.
My goodness.
All right, looking forward to that. Anywho, Kyle Larson punched his ticket with a pretty dominating win in Las Vegas.
It was a close one in the end. It was dominating, but it was also not exactly a walk in the park.
Well, yeah, Christopher Bell, you know, he came lurching like Jaws, you know, dun it, dun it. But at the end of the day, if you think about it, overall, he was pretty comfortable. Well, Matt, he loves March Madness, though. He never follows college basketball besides that. Well, Matt, we gotta get you two Canadians going here. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's wild. I don't know. Follow somebody. But Kyle Larson dominates. I'm gonna go ahead and say it, and you tell me if I'm wrong. Kyle Larson is the championship favorite for 2024. Yes or no?
It's hard to disagree. I mean, at this point, he's the only one we know that's going to make the Final Four, or sorry, shall I say Championship Four. So that gives him a bit of an edge in that sense. There's also a bit of recency bias there in that, you know, he is the most recent winner. And yeah, I don't know if dominates the right word for that race, but certainly was, you know, he was involved for most of it. And I mean, I guess he did lead 104 laps, but
comfortable fashion.
Absolutely. Fashion. Yeah. And I think if we're talking best car on the track, I think Christopher Bell was faster than him, but it just came down to logistics as far as the race finish went. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I see anyone being capable of kind of dethroning him right now. We'd have to see kind of, I think, some extra hardcore dominance over the next couple weeks from a different driver. And saying that, I mean like a win and then also a really great performance, you know, a top five and a win. And then I might consider that Kyle Larson is not the favorite anymore, but I think you're right, you know. And as much as the Martin Truex fan inside me hates to say that, because I'd love for him to just be the favorite, he's not had the playoffs that, you know, anyone would want. So yeah, I don't know, I gotta tip my hat to Kyle Larson. I think you're right, but at the same time, this, you know, success in this sport can be fickle as well. And you know, look at Martin Truex, regular season champion, and has had a terrible playoffs by all accounts. So Kyle Larson could completely poop the bed over the next 2 weeks, and I would think, you know, he's the underdog for the championship. So it's too early to say, but I think at this very moment, if we were to pick a favorite, I think it's hard to count him out.
No, I think you make some good points. You're right about the fact that success in this sport is very fickle, especially in this format. We know it comes down to that one race at Phoenix. But right now, I think they're getting hot at the right time. And an interesting storyline kind of coming out of that, you were there, you asked the question even, where do they feel they are compared to that championship run a few years ago? And Cliff Daniels, I believe, told you, because I watched it on Press Pass, that he feels like they're head and shoulders better than they were in 2021. Do you want to elaborate on that some?
Yeah, sure. It was kind of funny because I asked pretty much the same question to both Cliff Daniels, Kyle Larson's crew chief, and Kyle Larson himself. Sorry, I'll interrupt for a sec. Matt Maher saying he's still confident in William Byron, but I think Homestead will decide a favorite. Yeah, it's possible. And I mean, Larson is notoriously really good at Homestead too. So yeah, we'll see. I asked both Cliff Daniels and Kyle Larson about, you know, kind of where they compare this year to their championship year 2 years ago. And it was interesting to kind of see the difference in their answers, because Kyle Larson was like, yeah, it feels pretty much the same. It's, you know, I feel like we're very similar to that year. And yeah, it feels the same, even though, you know, I think he racked up 10 wins that year. He said the wins aren't the same, but it feels the same. And then Cliff Daniels went a little further with it and was like, no, this is different and it's better. We have two more years of being gelled together. We have, you know, gone through a little bit more adversity. 2 years ago, they won in the last generation car. And so Cliff Daniels was saying that this car is a lot harder to win in. Actually, I think they both were saying that. This car is harder to win in because it's almost a disadvantage to the leader, you know, aerodynamically speaking. I won't get too into the weeds there, but saying basically, like, once you become the leader of the race, your car is almost at a disadvantage aerodynamics wise, and so it's hard to maintain the lead and stay there. So yes, the wins haven't come as easily this year for them. I think this was his fourth win of the season, and obviously he won't be able to make it to 10 this year, but I don't know. Yeah, they, whether it's just posturing or they truly believe that this is a better year than 2 years ago, you certainly can't fault them for that confidence, and they're showing it.
No, you have to be confident going into it. If you don't believe it, then no one else is. But I do think they're, and I say this with all due respect to Cliff Daniels especially, I do think he was kind of, whether he meant to not, or overstating in my view, because you can say how things feel, and hey, if they feel great, that's wonderful. But the results also don't lie, and they are very good. Like I said, I think the championship favorite right now. But to say they are where they were resume-wise in 2021, that just is not true. Whether he likes that or not, I'm sorry. Again, I say that with all due respect, nothing against Cliff Daniels. I just was pretty – I was pretty surprised by how strongly he feels they're better than they were then. And I get his point, but results are still the results. And as they say, numbers don't lie. They're a little misleading sometimes, but they don't lie.
Well, and I also wonder from Kyle Larson's perspective, if he, you know, maybe he does feel like it is better this year, but that's, you know, that's some immediate bulletin board material there. As soon as you start saying, yeah, I think we're better this year than we were the year I won the championship. You know, the minute he goes out and, I don't know, gets a flat tire on lap 200 at Phoenix and loses the race, then it's, you know, then he looks a bit like an idiot, or at least maybe feels that way. So maybe he's downplaying it too. So
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it could be a little, you know, downplaying. It could be hyperbole on Cliff Daniels' part. It could be a little sales speak. Who knows? One other major story coming out of Vegas was the disqualification that wasn't. And what I mean by that is Ryan Blaney was DQ'd in post-race inspection. And then they reversed it the day after Monday. They reversed it Monday afternoon. And so he remains at 17 above the cut line. I believe he would have been at like 58 below the cut line. I said 17 above the cut line, pardon me. Yeah. 17 below the cut line. And then I think 58 below would have been the difference. So one thing very interesting, you were at Vegas as a credentialed media member. How does that process happen? How do you get told that he is DQ'd? Well, you know, walk us through that.
Yeah, it's it was kind of wild because we actually got the news first that Kyle Larson had, you know, passed inspection. And so he was officially the winner. And so I was thinking, okay, usually, you know, when they announce that, then that means inspection's complete for everyone. And that's that, right? And they didn't actually announce that in the media center, but I saw it from Hendrick Motorsports' Twitter account. And sometimes I thought, you know, they're right there. They would have been told right away that their win was confirmed. So I saw that on Twitter and I said, okay, great. It looks like we're good. No issues. And we started kind of at that point crunching some numbers and seeing where everyone was going to be and, you know, how far from the cut line are we now that everything's official. And then, NASCAR communications have people inside the media center. And suddenly we get someone saying, hey, excuse me, you know, we have an announcement. Cup post-race inspection is complete and Ryan Blaney has failed inspection. They gave us the rundown on what the rule was that was broken, or at least what they thought was broken. And that was that. And so then everyone was then scrambling at that point to redo their math and figure out, okay, what does the cut line look like now? You know, we had people all pulling out their calculators a little bit on their phone and figuring that stuff out. So yeah, it was kind of wild to be there because everyone was quite shocked. And it was, I don't know, maybe I'm just not remembering, but that, I think that was the first time I've ever heard of that even being an issue in post-race, you know, a shock length or something like that. I guess we were shocked. I didn't mean to say it that way, but yeah, we really were shocked. And then the next day I was on my way home. I was driving home when I got the news that it had been reversed, and it seemed like there was an issue with NASCAR's inspection process, based on my understanding. Now, I was kind of checking it out as I was driving, trying not to read while driving, but so it seemed like they, some sort of failure in the inspection process that they realized and then reversed the decision. So I'm not sure. I haven't had a chance to do a whole lot of reading on that since I was back, but I'm not sure if that's like, did Ryan Blaney just get away with one here? Like, what did he have something that was a little perhaps strange, but they had to invalidate the inspection results because of their flaw in their system? Or was this like a complete mistake? Like, I find it hard to think that he would fail inspection, but no one else would have anything to do with their shocks come up on the inspection. Like, I would imagine that if there was something wrong with their system, then that everyone would have failed on that same parameter. I don't know.
No, I hadn't even thought about that. The idea of maybe something, because you're right. Why wouldn't it flag even other Team Penske cars if it had an issue? Although, to be fair, before we get down the conspiracy rabbit hole here, they don't check everybody. They kind of are picky and choosy about who they check. I don't know what goes into that process of them checking, but I know they don't check all 36 cards. Is that correct?
I believe they do.
They do check all 36.
I think that is, right. I mean, that's my understanding of it. I haven't watched them do it.
Sometimes I can be wrong. Let's mark it down right here. October 18th, my father's birthday even.
I mean, I could be wrong here. Maybe we should look to the refreshers. Is that what we decided they were called?
No, refreshers. Let us know, refreshers, Matt. If you could do some Googling, some searching, let us know. Founder, anybody at all, let us know. Do they check every car?
My understanding is that they check everyone. They go through the scanners again after the race, but then there are a selection of cars that also get taken to R&D, which is like a full teardown. Mm-hmm. And from there, you can also get penalties if there's something that the scanners don't find. I think the scanners are more of like a basic check just to make sure you haven't like tweaked something in the middle of your race to make your car way, you know, illegal. But then I also do find it interesting sometimes when they announce which cars are being sent to R&D, and it's like always the cars that looked really fast at some point during the race. So I don't know if that's where they get a little bit more choosy and they think, oh, you know, this is interesting. Yeah, I pulled up the statement here. I wanted to remind myself. It says, after further review of the inspection process throughout this weekend's events at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, NASCAR has rescinded the number 12 disqualification penalty. Monday morning during its race weekend debrief, NASCAR discovered an issue with the damper template used for inspection. They then conducted a detailed investigation and have restored the number 12's finishing positions, blah, blah, blah. And they're taking internal steps to remedy this issue moving forward. So, yeah, it sounds like it's an issue with the actual mechanism that does the inspections, right? That am I understanding that correctly?
That's the way I took it when I read it originally, yes.
And so does that mean that it just flagged Ryan Blaney by mistake if there was an issue there? Or does it mean that Ryan Blaney might have had something funky going on with his shocks, but because they found this issue with their thing, they cannot rely on that as a disqualification parameter? And at that point, it's Monday morning, but you know, the cars are already back in the hauler heading back to probably out to Homestead, right? Mm-hmm. So
it you know, kind of interesting to compare it. I don't know how it works up in Canada, but in the US, if somebody has a ticket, but the information was written down wrong by the officer, the ticket will be thrown out, even if even if everything was accurate as far as what matters as far as legal offense. Just as the same thing with like a DUI case, if the breathalyzer turns out to be faulty, that kind of null and voids anything to do with whether you were actually guilty or not.
Right.
So it might be you might be right about some of the similar take there. Maybe Ryan Blaney still did have a faulty shot, I mean, whatever it was.
That's me totally spitballing. That's not based on any info or anything.
But it's an interesting conversation. Yeah, that's the point, right, of this show, is to have some conversations. I don't know. Good for Ryan Blaney, though, because he gets back kind of in the ball game. He's still up against it, make no mistake about that. Sure. But he was in an absolute must-win situation if that penalty stood. Mm-hmm. Where now, you know, a win would be great, and that's probably what he needs to shoot for. But all can decide some top fives and some help, you're in the ball game.
Right.
So it's a huge swing.
Yeah.
All right. Sure. Take us.
It reminded me of I don't know if you watched The Office, the dinner party scene.
Where
Michael is talking about, you know, the emotional toll that it takes on a body to snip, snap, snip, snap. I was like, wow, Ryan Blaney's really getting the old snip, snap.
Yeah.
We've got producer Peggy making an appearance. Would you like to comment on Ryan Blaney? Is that what's going on here?
Usually, yes. But I did some digging.
Okay, yes.
And it appears as though they take the top five finishers to inspection after a race. Although Ryan Blaney finished
6th at Vegas.
So maybe they took everyone in the playoffs?
Maybe.
But usually it looks like they take the top five.
Now that you say that, that is ringing a bell to me, but I don't know. See, what do I know? And I was even there I was working on other stuff at the time, so I wasn't watching the cars go through.
You must have been in the wrong room, buddy.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, that does make sense, though. I bet they would do all the playoff cars. If they normally do the top five, I bet they would do all the playoff drivers as well.
I would think. So, interesting. Thank you, Producer Peggy.
Coming in hot with the research. I like it.
We'll see you in a little bit. All right. Take us to NHRA real quick here, Adam.
Yeah, NHRA was down in Ennis, Texas. Which, to be honest, I'm not sure I know where that is. I've not heard of Ennis, but sometimes the way they explain their schedule, they'll say, you know, it's Ennis, Texas, but really it is, you know, a bigger city, but I don't know. Just forget what I'm saying. Anyways.
I pronounce that Ennis.
Ennis, would you? Well, I'm sure you would, Logan. Yeah. I don't know. you got your Pro Stock Motorcycle winner, Gage Herrera. I feel like I've seen that name a lot this year. Lots of wins for Gage in the Pro Stock Motorcycle category. In Pro Stock, you got Erica Enders. Matt Hagen won in Funny Car. And in Top Fuel, you had Miss Leah Pruitt, also known as the wife of Tony Stewart, although it feels disrespectful to maybe just, you know, diminish her to just being Tony Stewart's wife. She's certainly the more successful drag racer when it comes to that relationship. But yeah, congrats to them on their win. And I believe they just have two more weekends left of, you know, driving in straight lines and going for their championship there. So best of luck to all of them. And our old pal AJ, who is a member of the John Force Racing team there as well. So
1,000%. Yeah, it's amazing how quickly the motorsports season has flown by, and we're in the home stretch now.
Honestly, like as I was like finishing up in Vegas this past weekend, I was like, I can't believe that there's only three weekends left. It's it has gone by really quickly. It seems like it's gone by extra quick this year. I don't know if that's just me, but
I completely agree. Yeah. It feels extremely fast.
Yeah,
and that's not a pun for the sport. It does. It feels like it's just flown.
Yeah,
but I tell you, it's been good. So, the off season goes quick because it's the shortest off season in all the sports.
I guess you'd rather, you'd rather feel like it's going by too fast than to have fans saying, "Oh man, this season's really dragging on. It's been like,
oh god, this is miserable, boys."
Yeah. So.
No, and then of course the off season is not long at all. Really, you get through the holidays, and then it's time to go again. So
I know, but I feel like it does feel a lot longer because I miss it when it's gone.
Always, buddy. I miss it. I miss it that first Sunday because I go, I'm really not going to see that again for like 2 months, 3 months. You kidding? This is so wrong. Yep. All right, now it's time for our happy hour headline. Okay. I was wondering there.
I know we're getting worried for a sec. Mm-hmm. All right. She passed out. We don't know.
So a little surprising decision by my good pals. I'm using that term pretty loosely. Legacy Motor Club. Carson Hocevar is not going to run in the 42 at Homestead. Instead, it's going to be John Hunter Nemechek, who, as you know, will be driving the 42 full-time next season. Looks like it was a joint decision from all parties. Of course, that takes some JGR approval. That takes Toyota, Chevrolet.
I mean, I can't imagine that was a Carson Hocevar decision. I bet if it was up to him, he'd be in there every week.
That was one of those. Well, okay. It is interesting because it was just a couple weeks ago, 10 days, 14 days, whatever it was, they announced that Carson Hocevar was going to run the races the rest of the year. On social media, so kind of an interesting change of plans.
I've got my conspiracy hat on for this one. Do you want to
drop that out?
I don't know if it's a conspiracy. Maybe it's the wrong word, but I've got a theory about it. It seems like convenient timing that they've already made this announcement saying yes, Carson Hocevar is going to be in the 42 for the rest of the season. We're going to finish out strong with Hocevar.
Yep.
And then Las Vegas happens. You've got Jimmy Johnson in attendance for the first time in a while, because I believe he lives in the UK, right?
He does.
So
yeah,
he's back across the pond coming to watch for the first time in person. And, you know, Carson Hocevar unfortunately crashes in the race and doesn't finish, gets a DNF in that 42. And shortly thereafter, he's no longer going to be driving that 42 next weekend. I believe it was you that told me, Logan, as well, that this was the first time that Jimmy Johnson and Carson Hocevar met as well this past weekend. Yeah, they had not met yet.
That was the first time they at least met in person. I'm sure they've spoken over a Zoom
for sure,
or something. But yes, that was the first time they met.
I don't understand it. Our pal here, Matt Marr, agrees with me. Does not understand the point of this. If it was to get Nemechek used to the car, wouldn't they have had him do it since Gregson's suspension?
My guess would be that Chevy wouldn't approve that. That's a lot of time to a Toyota driver. You know, there's a difference between one race and, because it's well known, or it was well known at the time, that the reason Josh Berry was approved for a couple races is because Chevy said, well, they're both lame duck teams anyway.
Right.
So I don't think that Chevy would have approved a long-term John Hunter deal. I do think this is some sort of one-off kind of – I don't think the crash has anything to do with it. I do think it's very possible that for some reason Carson didn't make a great impression on Jimmy, or Jimmy being over here across the pond and has been in the shop this week – just started making some calls and going, wonder if we could, hey, I know I'm leaving Chevy, but all can decide we've had a good relationship for a long time. Can we do everybody a solid here and give me one?
Yeah.
Because, yes, I'm sure that Jimmy is very involved from across the pond via, with Zoom and everything. You can be pretty involved even from afar. But it is different when you are at the shop and able to make the calls yourself and kind of, you know, it's different when you hear someone's vision and go, yeah, I agree, versus you're in person and, yeah, I can really take my time and approach that situation, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because to my knowledge, Cal Wells and Mike Beam are making most of the day-to-day calls for Legacy Motor Club. But it's going to be interesting, good for them to get a little bit of their feet wet and kind of make that debut, and you're not completely going in blind. Daytona, that's what it's all about. It's let's see if we can, from a legacy standpoint, let's see if we can build a little chemistry and see what we got to work on going into Daytona.
I guess,
but it is perplexing, no doubt.
I'm curious because, you follow Legacy Motor Club a lot more than I do, and you are a fan of them, if I may say, on your behalf.
That's not a problem, brother.
Does this, like, I don't know, what are your thoughts on this? Does this reflect poorly on the organization that they're doing this like fancy video, like, oh, look at this, Carson Hocevar, we're offering you these final four races, it's a great momentous thing, only to kind of backpedal on that a few weeks later without really seemingly an explanation? Like, it would be different if it was like, oh, Carson Hocevar has done something that is, not to our liking, or he's broken some rule or something, and we're going to suspend him for a race or something. There's not really anything other than suddenly Jimmy Johnson shows up and they're changing what they've said. Like, does that reflect poorly on them?
I think it reflects, I don't know. I don't know if poorly is the correct term, but it reflects there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Again, it's one of those things that if Cal Wells said in a Zoom meeting, hey, we're going to have Carson Hocevar, do you think that's all right? And you don't know where Jimmy's head was at the time or what else he's doing in the UK. Probably a nod along, yeah, let's do that. And then you get there and you go, we could make this happen. So, yeah, I think it's just where there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen. There's a ton of people that have some sort of authority. Frankly, it's concerning in terms of a long-term vision for the team.
Well, even just I'm thinking, like, does that mean that we can't necessarily trust what they say? And I'm not saying that there's this big conspiracy that they're lying or anything. I just mean, like, they came out and announced that Carson Hocevar was staying for the final four races, and they changed their mind. Can we take anything else they say completely seriously? Or is there a chance that, Richard Petty is going to roll up one day and say, actually, I don't think I like that decision, we're going to change this too, right?
Well, I don't think
it does make for a little unrest.
Look, I think it does. I get your point, and I think you're right. There's a lot of cooks in that kitchen, and I don't know if you can take anything as gospel unless Maury Gallagher or Jimmy Johnson say it. Anybody else? Right. Probably it's probably accurate, but it might not be. I just think that because there's so many cooks in the kitchen, it's easy for that vision to change.
Right.
And I think that's what took place. I don't think it's any malice or bad. It's just, I think Jimmy got over here, got a little more hands on, and said, "Why don't we try this?"
Right.
I mean,
I'm not trying to pick on them, and
sure.
I'm more just.
No, it's interesting. Know. It's one of the first times we can ever remember a team going back on the word in 2 weeks or so.
And also, like, I can't imagine that Jimmy Johnson was not a part of the discussion to have Josevar for those four races, right? So,
yeah.
I can't imagine that he came back from, you know, he wasn't like on a long flight from England and came and thought, "Oh gosh, what you guys have done? What I got to change this?" Like, yeah. I imagine he must have been a part of that decision. So
I would hope so.
Yeah,
again,
that'd be a problem if not.
We could do 30 minutes on just the people that could potentially make decisions at Legacy Motor Club,
right?
And that's an interesting problem, to be honest with you, because you don't have other teams where you go, "Wonder who is making the final decision there."
Right.
The only person I know that makes the final decision.
That's the other part of it too. Yeah. Sorry. That's the other part of it too. Is it does get complicated when you look at the different manufacturers at play as well too. Like, you know, John Hunter Nemechek is a Toyota driver now, and he's coming up. He's going to drive a Chevy for one race, but it's like, you know, how much info is Chevy giving Legacy Motor Club right now? Because they know that they're leaving. They're probably getting nothing. And I don't know. Yeah, it's a very weird, convoluted little story, but
yep, convoluted is the word. It's going to be interesting. Hopefully, this has been a year of growing pains, and they can all be on the same page going into Toyota, because they didn't even start out on a great foot with Richard Petty's headlines in Daytona.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if this was just a year of growing pains or if there's deeper issues at play. All right, Budweiser is going to sponsor the number four Homestead. Budweiser back in the sport. I know it's for one race, and because Harvick is leaving and retiring, he'll be in the Fox booth in 2024, and going to be interesting to see, you know, this big Forever 500, I think is what it's called, right? The Forever 400.
Forever 500, which is named after, you know, well, not named after, but named in his honor. I guess, you know, this kind of. This for me was an interesting discussion point, just because for me, I don't have that nostalgia of like seeing a Budweiser car. Like I imagine some of the race fans who've been around longer than I have, is this like a nostalgia type thing where he's, you know, is this cool to see the Budweiser come back, or is this, do we care?
I think it's cool. For the sake of nostalgia and all those things, I think it's really cool. I do. I like it.
Sorry, it's the Forever 400. Our mistake here. It's only 400, but yes.
But I think it's cool. You know, a little nostalgia. That's where he won the championship. Of course, Budweiser. When you think Budweiser in the sport, you think Dale Jr. If you don't, I don't know what you're thinking. But yeah, I think it's cool. I hope it leads to them being more involved in the sport going forward. But a one-off is always nice. So we'll see what happens there.
Excuse my ignorance here. Is Budweiser not a part of like Bush as well? Like, is that not Budweiser, Bush? Is that not?
Yeah, they are, but for whatever reason, they have completely not been involved in the sport as far as a true sponsor goes.
Yeah.
Bush Light has been the core sponsor and will be the core sponsor for Ross Chastain next year.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they're probably going to do a watermelon flavor, I'll bet. It's definitely cool since he won his only championship in that ad scheme, but it's not the same scale as Dale Jr.'s nostalgia. You're right, because when you think of that, you think of Dale Jr. I mean,
that's kind of what I was thinking, but I, you know, as a fan who wasn't watching as much back then, and I say as much, I wasn't watching at all. I wasn't even a fan yet. You know, I was like, I feel like Budweiser is a Dale Jr. thing, but that just more so shows my ignorance when it comes to the year Kevin Harvick won his championship. It did prompt me to ask, though. I'm curious what you think of this, Logan. Like, what do you think of this kind of the Kevin Harvick farewell tour that we're getting this year? Like, it feels almost similar to when Jimmy Johnson was leaving the sport, or I guess retiring, not leaving the sport, but retiring from driving full time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice to see him get his flowers, if you will, but is it getting too much, or is it the right amount?
I think they've struck a perfect balance. I don't think there wasn't a ton of talk about it early on. There were weeks where it wasn't mentioned. I think they're striking the right balance. It's been subtle tributes. It hadn't been shoved down your throat. I think it's been a good balance. I like it.
I don't remember a race being named in Jimmy Johnson's honor, but I could be wrong.
I don't believe there was either.
Not saying there should have been.
They did for one race, Phoenix, for Jeff Gordon's final race as a full-time driver. They did change the name of the track to Jeff Gordon International Raceway for one race only. Yeah. So there has been similar tributes to guys like that.
Mm-hmm. There is also the fact that we know that Kevin Harvick's joining the Fox Sports booth next year. And so that rules out kind of this, you know, this Eric Almirola style. I'm retiring. Oh, JK, I'm not. I'm coming back. Or, you know, we know where he's going. He's not coming back full time, at least. That's for sure.
Yeah, I do think because I've been watching a little longer than you. I've honestly at certain times this year, not recently, but I remember midway through the summer going, boy, they're not giving Harvick the kind of farewell tour they've given others, because they gave Tony a big farewell tour and Gordon a big farewell. They would go around the track after almost most races and wave hi to the fans and the whole deal. Literally, Richard Petty got a whole year in 92 to say goodbye, and they made that a whole thing. And so at midway through the summer, I thought, they're not really giving him similar the kind of props I thought they would when I watched Jeff Gordon or Jimmy Johnson or Tony Stewart go. But lately, they've stepped that up. But I think part of that is also because NASCAR retirements are proving to be kind of like pro wrestling retirements, and that's, yeah, we're done full-time driving probably, but would we be stunned to see you in the track in the car again? No. Kevin Harvick says he's done and ain't gonna race again, period. My gut says he'll race again somewhere someday for a start, because that's just where we're at right now. But no, I don't think it's too much. I think they've struck a good balance. There was a pit leader 2 minute. Go ahead. Anything else?
Sorry. I was gonna say, have we seen Kevin Harvick's final win already? He doesn't get it done in the next three races, does he?
Yeah. His best shot is Phoenix, but again, that's a different car, and there are the conspiracy theories of the championship four.
Yeah.
I think Talladega was his best shot.
Yeah.
You know, never say never, because this sport produces weird things, but I think he's done as far as winning goes.
Gotcha. Okay. Sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, you're good, buddy. So yeah, I do. I think he's maybe, you know, I think his best shot would be running another Super Speedway race somewhere down the line. But this year, I don't think he's winning. But who knows?
His last win was at Richmond, and it was over a year ago now. So
stranger things have happened.
True.
I would think his best shot is Phoenix, but also the championship four circumstances. We'll see what happens. All right, there was a penalty to two members of the 54 team lost wheel on Sunday. Well, we know the drill on this. Safety, that's the most important thing. I like where NASCAR is with the penalty. I think it now fits the crime. It's not too severe. It's not too light. What say you?
I prefer the penalty this year to what it was last year with the four race suspension. I felt like, and the crew chief being suspended felt a little bit, you know, the crew chief isn't down there tightening those lug nuts. And it's different from the previous car when you had the five lug nuts. And sometimes, you know, maybe as a strategy, you were like, I'm only going to throw four on this time because, you know, we can get out that much faster and four should hold it, right? There's no strategy advantage to leaving the lug nut loose because your wheel's going to come off. It's just one lug nut, right? So I don't think there's any more strategy call there. I think it's just mistakes that happen. I feel like it's almost enough of a penalty that your car is going to have the wheel come off of it because you're probably wrecking out at that same point. But I also understand that they want to make it pretty serious for safety reasons. So I'm sorry. I felt like I was a little distracted there. I was just looking. Do you know what Kevin Harvick's best track is by average finish?
Go ahead.
It's Homestead.
Hmm.
I know. I was surprised to see that. So
that is, I would not have guessed that. I would have said Phoenix or Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I would not have guessed Homestead. All right. Well,
there you go.
Hold your horses.
Wait and see. Yeah. As soon as I saw that, I was like, wow, that's interesting. So.
Okay. All right. No, yeah. that was worth the distraction.
There you go.
Christian Eckes will return to MHR in 2024. Good for him to get an opportunity. Did you think that, he might move up to the Xfinity Series?
I was a little surprised. Yeah, I thought that maybe he might, qualify to move up to the Xfinity Series. But, I wonder if there weren't many opportunities in, like, good equipment there. And, you know, he's had a pretty solid year in the MHR truck this year. So I certainly don't see any fault in returning to that. But, I certainly would be maybe concerned in 2025 if he's not moving up. At that point, it would be time, I think. So, yeah.
Well, it will be interesting to see how his year goes. We, of course, wish him the best, but yeah, pretty surprised, and I agree. And then finally, today it came out, it's made some headlines. Dave Moody spent a great amount of time on his show talking about this, so I felt like we should throw it in. Jeff Gordon said that teams need to make a stronger connection with the fans, and he means teams as in Hendrick Motorsports or Joe Gibbs or Legacy Motor Club. He thinks that NASCAR needs more team-driven marketing push, because when they lose a driver, they lose a ton of fans. If Chase Elliott leaves, of course, Hendrick is the one exception in NASCAR, really. Hendrick has a by NASCAR standards, our friend does put it that way. And by NASCAR standards, their brand is pretty strong. So they're the one loyal, following that NASCAR kind of has.
Is it that people love Hendrick, or is it that people, maybe more casual fans like to root for a car that often has a chance to win? I don't want to pick on you here, Logan, no. But it must be harder to be a Legacy Motor Club fan than it is to be a Hendrick fan, because, your chances of getting a win from week to week. I could pick Spire Motorsports. I could pick, Rick Ware. Yeah. And I don't necessarily mean to put LMC in that same category, but I just mean, you've only got two cars with LMC. You've got four in Hendrick who are routinely competitive. At least, mm-hmm. At least one per race is in the conversation to win.
Sure.
Do you get those casual fans who are like, well, hey, I like to watch cars go around in a circle real fast, and I like to have the driver I'm cheering for win, so I'm going to pick Hendrick because, is it like a bandwagon type fan?
Well, I think that's possible. I also think because of their lineage, they have a lot of people that come and say, why not root for them? Chase Elliott is the son of one of the greatest icons of sports ever seen. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Johnson drove there. Of course, Jeff Gordon drove there and is now the second command there. So I think it's lineage. I think it's success. They're kind of – they're like the – not on the same scale, but in NASCAR world, they're like the New York Yankees. There's just a certain brand about HMS. But everybody else that's not there, on this show, we try to keep our fandom at the door, but you're an MTJ guy and you're not sticking with Gibbs after he goes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's true. I guess. Yeah. Now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure that my next driver after Martin Truex Jr. retires is probably going to be Tyler Reddick, but mm-hmm. I do follow the Toyota thing. I like Toyota, so that's part of it. But I don't know. Yeah, if Reddick was driving for JGR, I'd still follow them too. So it's not mm-hmm. anything against JGR, but yeah, sure. I get what you're saying.
But yeah, that's I think what he's talking about in terms of we need more for the teams is because at some point, Chase Elliott's not going to be at Hendrick anymore, whether that's a free agency or a retirement, which is more likely. And then does Hendrick have a ton of fans? Just, I'll see you. And then usually when you root for or a driver or an organization, when your driver has a bad day, you root for the other cars in that organization. And right. So I do think that he makes a good point about there needs to be a little bit more team-driven aspect in the sport, because – I think that's part of the reason that we've lost a lot of fans is because so many people get attached to drivers. And I mean, how many comments do you see? I haven't watched since Jimmy Johnson stopped racing. My father was a diehard Mark Martin fan. He understood the sport and watched the sport and taught me the sport. Now he has no idea what's going on because ever since Mark Martin has retired for good, because he had a lot of back and forth, he pays no attention to the sport. Mm-hmm. The closest he comes to is he kind of likes Chastain because he's a member of the Moose. That's it.
Right.
That's it. And so my point is my father's a great example of a lot of fans that have lapsed out entirely because they're dry. I have an uncle, huge Dale Jr. fan. He was a huge Dale Sr. fan and then became a Dale Jr. fan. When Dale Jr. finally retired, he again, these people who watched religiously every week, that's two examples, they lapsed out, and neither one of them have any idea what the sport's doing now.
Right. Now, do you think that some better, you know, work on the team's part to become more marketable in that sense would save that? Or is it just that no new driver has come up and snatched their attention in that same way?
I think NASCAR needs to make an effort, and this is going to sound, because it's still individual based, but you need to have more retirees stay a part of the sport. Yeah. I think you can still kind of cling to that individual.
Right.
Because I don't know if there's ever going to be a day where you just root for a team because that's the team.
Do you get a lot of Jeff Gordon fans who are now like Hendrick fans because he's second in command there?
I grew up a Jeff Gordon fan, so I'm not it. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't stay a Hendrick fan.
Right.
I grew up Jeff Gordon was my first favorite driver in the sport. And so, but I think if you had drivers, how do I want to put this, hype up the fact that they're still around and that your loyalty still matters. Now, how do you do that? That's beyond my pay grade. I think it would help a little bit because so often we see, oh, my driver quit. And I, like I said, you didn't pick a new driver. You just stopped watching. And that's what we don't want. And so, yeah, I don't know how you do it. Cause again, above my pay grade, but I think Gordon's right. I think you need to find a way to, and he did clarify that the drivers are still always going to be the stars of the show, but it is concerning how many people have just said, I'm done because my driver's done.
I guess. So I don't know if I agree with him. I agree that that is concerning, but I don't know if I agree if that's the way to fix it.
What would you do?
I think it feels a little bit more like on Jeff Gordon's part that he's doubling down on some of these comments he made about Denny Hamlin over the last couple of weeks. I was pulling it up as you were talking there. He basically said that he thinks the way Denny Hamlin kind of conducts himself, his podcast and all that, he's quite outspoken. He calls that a distraction and says he wouldn't want any of his Hendrick Motorsports drivers acting the way that Hamlin does. Now Hamlin was asked about that this weekend and he basically said, thank God I don't drive for Jeff Gordon. And I don't know if Denny Hamlin is the best example because he's pretty polarizing. He can come across not always the nicest or the easiest guy to root for. But if we had more drivers who were a little bit more outspoken and showed a little bit more personality out there, I think that might be helpful to keeping fans engaged with drivers rather than saying, hey, let's all, pile on the Hendrick Motorsports bandwagon here, let's root for the team itself. I don't know if that's the answer.
It's an interesting conversation. I felt like it needed to be thrown in there to just
be talked about. I agree. Yeah.
I don't know how you would create more team loyalty fans, because even I'm not team loyal. I'm Richard Petty loyal, right? Richard Petty leaves Lakers Medical Club tomorrow. I'm like, I'll see you.
Yeah. Well, if Richard Petty got hired as an advisor for I don't know, Joe Gibbs Racing. I'm totally just making this up. You'd be a JGR fan. Yeah.
Hypothetically, if he buys in or is their team ambassador, that's where I would go. So yeah. I don't know how you would become more team centric loyal. I really don't. It's an interesting conversation. Definitely one worth having. And I can understand why Jeff Gordon goes, because at some point he's got to take over the reins, right? And so he's going,
yeah.
What do we do when all these guys go?
Well, and what do they have after these group of four are solid group of four, but once they leave, if and when they leave, You know, who do they have coming up in the pipeline there? I don't know if, I mean, that's maybe too far ahead to look ahead, but I could see him saying, well, we got to plan for that. And maybe if we can get these drivers to buy in on selling Hendrick rather than selling themselves, we have a contingency plan in place once they leave. So,
and kind of a final thought on all that. Remember, Jeff Gordon just a week or two ago now said that he thinks there needs to be more focus on the ownership, on the owner's championship. And a lot of people thought that, well, that's because Chase Elliott's in it and you're just being biased. With the, with those comments combined with these comments, you can tell it's a big goal of Gordon's to become more of a team-centric sport. It's
right.
going to be interesting, and he's going to be a major voice going forward. So it's going to be interesting to see how that happens.
But that's the other thing, too. Like, Martin Truex Jr. is in the playoffs, but his car is out of the owner's championship, you know, playoffs. Mm-hmm. And as an MTJ fan, I don't really care. I don't know. I'm rooting for the driver. I want him to win. And at this point, the fact that his the number 19 is not in the owner's championship anymore, I don't know if I really care, you know. And I don't know how you change that so that people do care about that. But that's, you know, I'm rooting for my driver, not for the car.
Because but the reason that it is important is because that's where the money comes from at the end of the day.
Oh, of course. I get that it's important. I just, I don't know if I care as much about that as I do about, you know, like if somehow through all of this, Chase Elliott in the nine wins the owner's championship, like I can't imagine how that works, but there is a way, I guess.
Yeah, there's
does anyone care other than Hendrick Motorsports? Like, are there any Chase Elliott fans going, hey, well, you know what? Good for us. We're so happy. You know, I don't know if anyone
cares. given the loyalty and love of Chase Elliott fans, I'm sure they would cling to that. Well, at least some of them.
You got to cling to something this season, but
absolutely.
Maybe I'm throwing shade. I don't know.
just interesting to think about. I think it's something we'll continue to kind of chat about, you know, as the years go on and as we go into 2024 and beyond. Be interesting. All right, now it's time for a weekend preview. And there's that lovely graphic. Thank you so much, as always, producer Peggy. All right, so all three series are at Homestead, Miami. Do you got any trucks or Xfinity predictions for me? I know we don't play the game for them, so we can kind of go straight up there. You got any thoughts?
I'm going to say in trucks, I don't know. Homestead is such an interesting track. Like a lot of the drivers were talking about that this weekend. Like one of the common questions that was being asked to some of these drivers was like, hey, Vegas is a mile and a half, and so is Homestead. Like, what can you learn from Vegas that you can take with you to Homestead? And they were all saying nothing. Homestead is its own beast. The way the banking, I can't remember who it was that said this, but one of them was saying, you know, Vegas is probably the track, the mile and a half track with the most grip, and Homestead is probably the mile and a half track with the least amount of grip. Then throw in the fact that it's only once a year, so they have not been there again this year yet. This is the first one and only time they're going there. I don't know what sort of, you know, who to pick on that in that sense. But for trucks, I'm going to go Austin Hill. And is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going crazy here? No, Austin Hill drives an Xfinity. See, look, I'm falling asleep here still. No, you know what? Let me just look at my list here. I'm going to say Zane Smith gets it done. Zane Smith in the trucks, Austin Hill for Xfinity is what I was trying to say.
And I think he needs it because if he doesn't win, I think he misses out on the cut. So be interesting for Zane. I think that's a good pick. All right, F1 Dakota. And then that means it's time to bring it on home and it's time for some Racing Refresh picks.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, go ahead and update us, buddy.
Well, yes, I know you've been chomping at the bit to get to this part, hey? Mr. Logan, I think this might have you just pulled a Max Verstappen, and I think technically you have just clinched the championship for our first inaugural Racing Refresh picks. Logan picked Joey Logano to take it home at Vegas. It's a good pick, I must say. Logano is good at Vegas. And he came 12th, so that means you won our little game for the week. And I think that puts you out of touch. I think even producer Peggy winning all the next three rounds would only put her at 12. So congrats there, but we'll still play it out. We'll finish out the year. Just, you know, to see how the rest of us do.
Sure.
Yeah. So for Homestead, we've got, Colin is to pick first. Now Colin's not with us today in case you hadn't noticed. But I was looking at his team and I think just because we have to make sure that we all pick different drivers in this last bit, I think we're going to give Colin Justin Haley for Homestead because, yeah, just the way, I don't know. I could explain it, but it would take too long. It's not that exciting. Yeah. So Colin's going to take Justin Haley. Next up on the list. Oh, it shouldn't be Colin picking first. It should be you picking first, but you don't even have Justin Haley. So go ahead, Logan, who are you picking? I got distracted by Colin.
It's all good. Why didn't I win?
Yeah. Oh gosh.
So why would I pick last?
Yeah. You know what happened is I didn't update this, the list here.
Nice job, bud.
Yeah, I know. Okay, let's just restart here. Reset. I get to pick first because I picked Carson Hocevar and he crashed and came in last place, which was great for me. I am going to pick the number 38 car. That's the Front Row Motorsports. And because I'm out of it, I don't even know if it's Todd Gilliland this weekend or someone else, but is it Zane Smith or I don't know. I'm picking the 38. Whoever's in the 38 is what I'm taking. Okay. Next pick is going to be producer Peggy. She had Briscoe last week. Wow.
I'm going to take Corey LaJoy.
Corey LaJoy. Yes. You were going to pick him last week and Colin stole it from you. So there you go. Next would be Colin. We're going to give him Justin Haley, as I said, and Logan, it's up to you. You really only have two choices because I already picked the 38. So you going Kevin Harvick or Ryan Preece? Kevin Harvick at the Forever 400 at apparently his best track.
Kind of have to do it, don't I? Yeah, I'll take Kevin Harvick. By the way, it's Todd Gilliland in the 38.
Okay, that's I was hoping for that, so that's good. So there we go.
You can check those entry lists at racingforrush.com.
That's right, yes. Thank you, Logan. All right, that's all. We're gonna
I'll take Kevin Harvick, and so that means it's time for a little closing time.
It sure is.
Hey, Peggy, the final words.
I'm gonna take my cold mints that I will block out the brand of.
Mm-hmm.
Are we really hoping to get some cold med sponsorship here?
Sponsorship is sponsorship, yeah.
We'll take it, actually. That's true.
I'm gonna go get a shower and I'm gonna go to bed.
All right.
Get well soon there, producer Peggy.
Do you have high hopes for Blaney this weekend at Homestead?
I mean, it's not one of his. He's not horrible there, but it's not one of his great tracks. So do I think he'll win? Probably not. Am I hoping he'll win? Yes.
Do you think he makes it to the championship four?
She didn't have him leaving the round of 16. I remember.
That's true.
Yeah. All right, Adam.
Final Ryan word. Blaney. Ryan Blaney is not in the top 10 of best drivers at Homestead, so not looking good there. I apologize for my fatigue today, but it's been a good show. I appreciate both of you and. Appreciate those of you tuning in, whether live or later on. We appreciate that. And looking forward to Homestead this weekend. I'll be watching from home. I won't be driving out to Miami this weekend. So catch up on some Z's or Z's, as us Canadians say.
Nice. Well, hey, looking forward to Homestead, Miami. I'll be tuned in, dialed in. We're still rooting and we're still loving over here. As members of the club, quote unquote. So with that, thank you for tuning in, and just three more races to go to after this weekend. Pretty insane, really.
Crazy.
It's not insanity, it's Loganity, huh? So with that, be safe, be well, and we'll see you at the next track.